Nashtapayesha Padeshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Tamasake Bhakti Bhavati Nashtiki. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 8th Chapter, verses 32 or 33. So we'll start with verse 30. Janma karma cha vishvatman ajasya kartaratmana tiryang nishishuyadasu tad adyantavidambanam. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Of course, it is bewildering, O soul of the universe, that you work, though you are inactive, and that you take birth, though you are the vital force and the unborn. You yourself descend amongst animals, men, sages, and aquatics. Verily, this is bewildering. Mukam karoti vachalam pangam langhayate girim yakipam tamam vande shigurum dinutaranam. Om Agyana Tibrandasya Gananjana Sharakaya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah. Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyati Deshtarine. So yesterday, we heard some interesting things about Krishna, that he is Kala, he is time. So what aspect of Krishna is time? If we're thinking of Krishna as the absolute truth, there's three aspects of the absolute truth. So which aspect is Kala? Paramatma, Supersoul. That's what we learned yesterday. That Prabhupada said that in the purport, that Kala is Paramatma, because Kala witnesses, the Paramatma witnesses everything that we do in our past life and gives us the reactions. So therefore, Krishna is Kala. And also we heard how it's very bewildering for many, many people that God can come in a human form to this earth. How can God be a human being like you and me? So today we're going to find out some of the things that bewilder people about Krishna. Contradictions that people find. The first thing in this verse here, it says that it's bewildering that you work though you are inactive. So Krishna is inactive, but still he works. And Krishna is born. He takes his birth, although he's unborn. So this is very bewildering for people to understand. So in Bhagavad Gita, it explains that why Krishna works. If Krishna didn't work, what would happen? You know? So he works here to set an example. And if Krishna didn't work, then the whole world would be put into chaos. Everyone would be imitating Krishna. Of course, people still try to imitate Krishna, although it's not possible. So he also comes here to teach us how to work, as you say, to set an example. If we don't have a good example to follow, then people will think, okay, let me just take it easy. So Krishna comes here to set the example. And he also says in Bhagavad Gita, you can't even maintain your body without working. So yesterday you were asking about working, about endeavor. So here we can understand, there's a little bit more explanation by Srila Prabhupada on this in his lecture. There is a verse actually in Hitopadesh that says that money may come to you. You mean as a result of your past pious activities. So whatever happens to you in this life, whatever you get, whatever happiness and distress you get, is a result of your work in your last life. So money may come to you, but still you have to endeavor to get the money. And in Hitopadesh, the example is given that it may come to you on the road. So money may come to you on the road, but unless you pick it up and put it in your pocket, you won't get the money. So some endeavor is required, even though the results will come to you automatically. Just like Arjuna, at his birth, it was predicted that he would be the greatest archer in the world. So what did Arjuna do about that? He knew this prediction. So does that mean he didn't practice? Does that mean he never went to a teacher and learned how to shoot the bow and arrow? No, he worked very, very hard. Not only did he work hard, he was shooting arrows at night. He was practicing at night, and that's why he got the name Gudakesha. One of the reasons why. There's other reasons, yes. Needed, what do you mean, needed? Right. Well, I mean, if you want guidance for your endeavor, then you have Nectar of Instruction, which you're studying now, that you don't over-endeavor. You know, there are limits. And Nectar of Instruction explains that. So I think it'll probably be covered that what is unnecessary endeavor for a devotee, especially, that there are limits to our endeavor. And so I think probably in that class you can get that question answered better. It would take a long time here for me to answer that. But there are limits to endeavor, especially for devotees. It's not encouraged that you endeavor very much for your happiness, but you should endeavor for self-realization. This is the main thing. And even in Bhagavad Gita, it's described that there's conditional and there's constitutional activities. So as long as the two parallel each other, then that's good. But if it gets out of balance, then you've got a problem. So here, Srila Prabhupada gives the example that there may be a gold mine under your feet. But if you just sit there and say, okay, I have a gold mine, it won't benefit you at all. You have to dig for the gold. So in the same way, you have to work in this life. But we have to understand that the results that we're getting from the work is not actually so much from this life, it's from our past life. Of course, for devotees, as we discussed, it's different. As devotees, we do get freed from our past reactions. So we surrender to Krishna, then of course the reactions will be completely different. It won't be reaction, but it'll be a token punishment. So we discussed that yesterday. So now Prabhupada is talking about how Krishna, he is inactive and still he works. So what does it mean that Krishna is inactive? What does it mean that he is not working? What's that? Physically. Okay? Yes? Yeah, well, we don't generally think about Krishna like that. That we think about ourselves, that we're not incurring any. Of course, it's true. It's true about Krishna. But, yes. He has no duty, okay? That's one thing. He has no duty. He has nothing to gain in this world. Yes. That's right. That's an important point, that simply by his will, this whole world is created. Simply by his glance. So what kind of work is that? That's not much of work. If you just look at something, if you just look and the whole world becomes manifest, the whole material world, just imagine if you had that power, just to look, and then immediately you have the planets, the universes, all these things. So this is Krishna. That's what it means when we say that he is inactive. And so Prabhupada gives an example of a pilot in an airplane, 747. Because sometimes when Srila Prabhupada was flying in the airplane, the pilot would come back and talk to Srila Prabhupada, and the plane would be going on automatic pilot. So Prabhupada said he just sits there and pushes the button, and this huge, gigantic plane is flying and doing so many things. So Krishna is like that. Krishna doesn't even have to push the button. He just has to glance, or he just, by his will, or by his desire, the whole world is being manifested. So if you can work like that, then you can be considered to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you can work simply by your glance and get people to do things, it would be very nice in this world if we could work like, but we're not God, so therefore it's not possible. So we can understand the difference between us and Krishna. That it doesn't work when we just glance and then someone does the work for us. We have to go through so many things. It's very difficult here. So Krishna, he's active. This is very inconceivable to understand this contradiction. It's bewildering. So when Krishna appeared here, people couldn't understand him. They had so many different ideas. Some people, they thought, actually the example is given when Krishna appeared in the wrestling arena of Kamsa. Then people were seeing him in so many different ways. The yogis, they were seeing him as Paramatma. And the impersonalists as the Brahman. That that definitely Krishna has come from the Brahman. Brahman is the source, but this is actually personified Brahman. So, impersonalists, they think they're attracted to the effulgence of Krishna. And the cowherd boys, they were simply seeing him as a friend. So today we'll discuss a lot, well, it's not a lot, but something about Krishna Lila. And I'll explain this picture a little bit later. So for the devotees, he's the supreme master. For materialistic people, he's just an ordinary human being. And so people have so many conceptions about Krishna. Krishna is very, very bewildering to them. So in the next verse, Kunti explains one of her own bewilderments. When she looks at the pastimes of Yashoda, it's very difficult for her to understand. Because she sees Krishna as Paramatma, as Supreme Person. She sees him as the Lord, Ishvara. So when she looks at Yashoda's pastimes, for her it's very bewildering. So let's read the next verse. We'll chant the Sanskrit. Gopya dade tai kita gasita matavat. Yate dasha shukali lanjana sampamaksham. Vaktram niniya paya bhavanaya stitasya. Samam vimohayati birapiyad bibeti. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. My dear Krishna, Yashoda took up a rope to bind you when you committed an offense, and your perturbed eyes overflooded with tears, which washed the mascara from your eyes. And you were afraid, though fear personified is afraid of you. This sight is bewildering to me. So this is for Kunti, it's very difficult to understand how Krishna is afraid of Yashoda. Everybody is afraid of Krishna. Yamaraj is afraid of Krishna. The demigods are afraid of Krishna. The wind blows out of fear of the Supreme Lord. The sun shines, the rain falls. Everything is out of fear. But Krishna, whom everybody is afraid of, he's afraid of Yashoda. So here we see in this pastime, I'll explain this picture to you. So this is a, in one picture, you can see the whole Braj Leela. No, it's just, it's more than the number of chapters. It was just to make it look good. Actually, there's 40 petals for the 40 chapters, but at around the end, there's extra petals, and it's just Ras Leela, because that's the essence of the Kaishora Leela, is Ras Leela. So we have extra petals are there, just Ras Leela. So that's the end of the Raj Leela. Then there's another picture for Dwarka Leela, and the rest of the 10th canto. There's a couple more pictures. And for each canto, there's one for each of the cantos. First, second, third, there's, for the big ones, there's two pictures. So I'll bring first canto maybe tomorrow, after a few days. You can see where we are in the first canto. You can see how it fits in. Here? Akrura. Yeah, he's coming to Vrindavan. So it's the end. This is the end of the Braj Leela. And there he's taking away, and the gopis are trying to stop him from going. And then he's seeing, this is right on the limit, on the boundary between Vrindavan and Mathura, where he sees the vision of Vishnu in the Yamuna River. Then the next picture will be from that point on, from Dwarka. Yes? Artist, her name is Shatadama. She's a Russian. So the book, there will be a book coming out that has all these pictures in of the whole Bhagavatam. That will, it's basically, it's for Bhakti Vaibhava course, but it will be for, anyone can buy it, of course. Yes? Yeah, some reaction you will get, but not the reaction you should have gotten. Krishna does interfere and he reduces the reaction. Prabhupada used to say that you get a cut on your finger, you should have died instead. Instead you just get a cut on your finger. Yes. Yes. Both. Both of your reactions are reduced. He can also increase them too. When you come to a certain level, then everything is finished. When you come to the level of bhava and prema, then all your anartas are finished. All your anartas. So something may even be there, but you don't, it doesn't disturb you. And you don't see it as a reaction. You don't see it at all like that. You don't, even some devotees don't even notice it, that it's happening, because they're so absorbed in love of Godhead. Sanatana Goswami, he was, when Lord Chaitanya called Sanatana Goswami to see him, he was in so much ecstasy, oh, Lord Chaitanya wants to see me. And he went along the beach in the summer with bare feet. And his feet, by the time he got to Lord Chaitanya, his feet were burnt. They were all blistered. He didn't notice. He didn't care. It didn't bother him, because he just wanted to see Lord Chaitanya. That's a very high stage, right. For us, we suffer. Yes. You have to pray. Yeah, when they die, it's taken off. Because there's a reason for it. There's a reason, there's something in the suffering. When you go through that, then you become purified. That's why Kunti's praying for it. When you go through the suffering, you get purified and you understand. Number one, I am not this body. And then you have more realizations even beyond that. So therefore it's necessary so that you can achieve the highest thing, love of Godhead. And sometimes Krishna puts us through suffering. So, but the devotee, he appreciates it actually in the end. In the beginning you may say, oh, this is terrible. But that you look back after a few years and you say, oh, this was actually just what I needed to get me on the right path. So let's go on here. We've heard that Krishna is a reservoir of something. What is Krishna a reservoir of? Yes. Pleasure, yes. Now, in one purport to a verse in 6th canto, Srila Prabhupada says that the Supreme Personality of God is a reservoir of everything, not only pleasure. So then he lists some things, including all knowledge, reservoir of knowledge, reservoir of truth, and a reservoir of contradictions. So that's what we're hearing about today, is how Krishna is a reservoir of contradictions. How he's born, he's not born, how he's afraid, and fear personified is afraid of him. So I would like to do something, a little discussion, which you come up and write, about some contradictions that people have about when they hear about Krishna. Some things that come into their mind that they feel are contradictions. Yes.
Krishna has come to establish the principles of
religion. Yes.
Not
yes. Especially in India, this is a very difficult point. That Krishna is supposed to be... Okay, let's see. How can we put this in very concise words? Religious? Yeah, okay. Dharma versus Rasalila. Okay, that's very good. Any other contradictions? That's why sometimes people will come up to me and say, how can you worship Krishna? He is really bad character. Look what he did. Yes. Oh, right. Okay. Right. Shishupal. Okay, Krishna says he's impartial and yet he's partial. That's what we discussed yesterday. How Krishna is impartial to everyone, but he's partial to his devotees. This is a very bewildering contradiction. How can one person both be impartial and partial at the same time? Yes. Good. Krishna is far away and also near. Far away and near. Yes. Anything else? Yes. Okay, he's inside and he's outside as well. But here, that's what Kunti said in her first prayer. He's inside, he's outside. Yes. Yeah, who knows chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita? He is not in them. Yeah, he says that, okay? They're all in me, but I'm not in them. Yes. Okay, there's only one Krishna. He's unique, but he's the source of all living entities. Yes. Okay, he's the cause of everything, but he is inactive. I think you lost one. Yeah, we lost one. What was before this? Okay, he's unique, but he's the source of all living entities. Yes? Okay. He causes suffering to his devotees. That's a contradiction. Yes. Very difficult to understand. Yes? He's unborn, but he takes birth. Okay, that one we hear quite a bit in Bhagavatam. Yes. He possesses, oh yes, that's a good one. He's the richest, he has all wealth, but he steals from others as if he's poor. And that's a contradiction that Prabhupada brings up, that he's the husband of so many Lakshmis, but he steals. Okay, how can this be? Now we see here in this, no, it's, yeah, up there, he's stealing the butter. He walks, but he does not walk, okay? He's bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest at the same time. Greater than the greatest, bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest. Smallest and biggest at the same time. Yes. Is that it? Here we got one in this verse. Everyone's afraid of him, but he's afraid of Yashoda. So how to understand all these contradictions? If we have time, then we'll go through all these contradictions at the end of class. See if we can figure them out. Okay, thank you. So Krishna, he appears differently to different people. Just like when he came as Nrisimha, he was fear personified to Hiranyakashipu, but he was solace to Prahlad. Same person. And he was seen in different ways by different people. So Prabhupada explains that this, the pastime of Krishna with Yashoda, and Krishna is binding Yashoda, this is one of the opulences. It shows one of the opulences of Krishna. Krishna has six opulences. What are the six opulences of Krishna? Yes? Beauty, yes. This one shows the opulence of beauty. How beautiful. Knowledge, okay? That's one, yeah. Strength, wealth, famous, renunciation. Okay, so this is the opulence of beauty, this particular pastime of Krishna with Yashoda. So why does Krishna want to be like this, afraid of Yashoda? Prabhupada explains that the nature of Krishna is that he's always in the temple and people are coming to worship him all day long, but nobody comes with a stick to chastise him. So he's thinking, oh, if only I could be somebody could just, you know, chastise me sometimes. That would be very nice. So therefore he comes to become chastised by his devotees, by Yashoda, by his cowherd friends, by the gopis. So there's a very nice contradiction how he comes. He's so rich, but he steals butter as if he is in need. And the other people complain, the other gopis, they complain, why is he stealing butter? There isn't, and his mother says, yes, there's so much butter in our house. Why do you go and steal? But actually, he does it just to please the other gopis. They're so happy to have Krishna in their house, even though they complain about him. So in the 10th canto, it's described that Krishna, there's one verse about this pastime on Yashoda, that the whole universe and all the demigods is under Krishna's control, but he has one transcendental quality, that he comes under the control of his devotees. So that's what we see here in this Braj Leela. That Krishna, he's coming under the control of his devotees. And what is it about the devotee that controls him? What is it that makes Krishna come under the control of devotees? Anyone who has taken, yes? Radharani, okay? Their love, yes. He's controlled by their love. And the love is, of course, Ladini Shakti, which is also, Radharani is in charge of Ladini Shakti. So some more contradictions. Prabhupada explains that he can run with more speed than the mind. How fast Krishna can run. But here, Yashoda caught him. Yashoda was able to catch Krishna, even though he's so fast. So, this is Krishna at the end of this purport, yes? Yeah, it wasn't long enough, right. Yes, and this time she couldn't tie the rope. Before she could do it, But now this time she couldn't, so what's the difference? This time Krishna was showing her, see, I'm not just your son. And two fingers too short means there were two things required for her to actually tie that rope. And one was her endeavor, she was trying to do it, and the other was Krishna's mercy. So endeavor was there, so much endeavor, she kept getting more and more ropes, but still she couldn't tie Krishna. So finally, when Krishna saw her love, then he gave his mercy and she could tie it. So we have to endeavor like Mother Yashoda. We have to endeavor in devotional service with great enthusiasm. And then finally, when Krishna is pleased with us, then he'll give us his mercy. So here at the end of this purport, Srila Prabhupada explains about Mother Yashoda. This is near the end. Mother Yashoda got the Lord as her child, and the Lord made her forget altogether that her child was the Lord himself. If Mother Yashoda had been conscious of the exalted position of the Lord, she would certainly have hesitated to punish the Lord. But she was made to forget this situation because the Lord wanted to make a complete gesture of childishness before the affectionate Yashoda. This exchange of love between the mother and the son was performed in a natural way, and Kunti, remembering the scene, was bewildered, and she could do nothing but praise the transcendental filial love. So now Kunti is appreciating those devotees who are in parental relationship with Krishna. And we'll see later on in the next few prayers that she will also praise those kind of devotees who are like the parents of Krishna, Vasudeva Devaki, and more the superiors. Because she's also actually in that position. Although she's not the mother of Krishna, but she's his aunt. So sometimes she knows he's his nephew, but she, at the same time, she wasn't like Yashoda. Yashoda forgot, but Kunti knew Krishna is the Supreme Person. She was aware of it, and that's why she couldn't understand, how can Yashoda chastise Krishna? How can she? I'm praying to him and offering, you know, he's the Supreme Lord, he's Paramatma, this, that. Yashoda has a stick ready to chastise him. So this was very bewildering for Kunti. And she's out of Vrindavan. So it's difficult for her to understand. So Krishna, as we said, he's under the control of his devotees' love. What are some other examples how Krishna is controlled by his devotees? He was controlled by Yashoda. Who else could control Krishna? Yeah. Radharani, yes. Sometimes Prabhupada told one story. He said that sometimes Krishna... Radharani gets angry at Krishna. And then she says, okay, don't come back. I don't want to see you. And so Krishna comes and begs the Sakis. And they say, no, we don't have any order from Radharani. You can't come inside. So this is how Krishna is controlled by Radharani. Yes. Right. So we see the cowherd boys playing. Well, mostly it's demons there. There they're eating together. But Krishna and the cowherd boys up there. There's a fire down here. They're playing, and when Krishna loses, he has to carry the cowherd boys on his shoulders. So also in the battle of Kurukshetra. Yes. Yes, he was a chariot driver of Arjuna. Just imagine, driving Arjuna's chariot. And in that story you were telling yesterday about Jayadratha, where whole day long they were going after Jayadratha to capture him, because if Arjuna didn't kill him before sunset, then he would have to throw himself into the fire. So Krishna was driving the chariot that day, and it's described that sometimes Arjuna would be shooting his arrows, and the chariot would be going faster than the arrows that he was shooting. He'd be ahead of the arrows. So that's how fast Krishna was driving his chariot. Very fast. So this is Krishna. And, yes? Yes. Yeah, right. About Yamunacharya, is it? Yamunacharya? Yes, I think it's Yamunacharya. Yes? The story on the verse, Ananyas Chintayanto Mam. I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. So the Yamunacharya was reading that verse and he said, no, Krishna doesn't do this personally. So he crossed out the word Vaham Yaham and he wrote Karomi Aham. Means I make somebody else do it, not that I do myself. Then he went out to take his bath. In the meantime, he went to beg. Yeah. According to Srila Prabhupada, I don't know. You have, was it who? Oh yeah, what does he say? Yamuna, yeah, that's what I said, Yamunacharya. Yeah. Uh-huh. He sent us. Right. Yamunacharya, I think. Now he beat them also. Two marks on their back. And she was saying, how can he be so cruel? He beat you. And so she said, you just sit down now, take some lunch, take something. No, they didn't. They didn't take. They said, no, we can't stay. Maybe he's coming. Maybe he will come. They were afraid to take prasad. Arjunacharya. Okay. Arjunacharya, is it? Yeah. Not Yamuna. Arjunacharya. Okay, thank you. Arjunacharya. Okay. And then he came back and he was, and his wife was eating before him. So in the Hindu culture, they don't do that. And he said, why are you eating before me? And she said, why were you so cruel to those boys? So then he said, what boys? She said, you know, those boys, you gave them all the heavy load and you beat them and there were marks on their back. He said, I never beat any boys and sent any food. Then he asked, please describe those boys. And she described and he understood it's Krishna himself has come. And then he went back and he realized that because I crossed off these words from Bhagavad Gita and I changed it, therefore it's Krishna himself, it's Bhagavad Gita. And he himself took that. And he came to show me, to prove that I do this personally. Krishna personally carries what we need. So we should always remember that it's very important how we behave and how we act in devotional service, because Krishna himself, he's personally taking care of us in our spiritual life. Here in Vrindavan, you can feel that very much, especially if you relate with the deities here. They're very, very personal. You have any little desire, immediately you get it, even if you don't pray for it. So beware what you desire in Vrindavan. So this is Krishna. And so he was, when he was driving Arjuna's chariot in the battle, then the horses got tired. And so Krishna made a hall of arrows. He made a pool for them. He drilled the ground. They don't have this technology these days to get water from the ground by shooting an arrow. He shot an arrow and water came up and he made a pool and the horses could drink. And he made a whole hall of arrows so that they were protected. And Krishna got down and made the horses drink and massaged them, took out the arrows and healed their wounds. So Krishna was acting as Arjuna's charioteer, actually. It wasn't just that he was sitting there and driving the chariot, but he was doing all the duties of a groom for horses. So this is Krishna, how he loves his devotees, how he's controlled by their love. He was a messenger. He was just like in India, they have peons, that they send them from one office to the other. So Krishna went as a messenger to Duryodhana to try to make peace. And he was an unsuccessful messenger too. Duryodhana would not have peace. So this is how Krishna plays with his devotees. Here we have, and the devotees in Vrindavan, they don't understand. The Yadus, they understood. The Pandavas, they understood. Krishna is the Lord. But here in Braj Leela, they didn't understand. Here in this petal right down here, Nanda is talking with the cowherd men, and they're discussing the amazing things that Krishna has been doing. And then Nanda was telling them, oh, Garga Muni, he predicted that this boy would be just like Narayan in his power and so many things. And they would discuss it, but eventually their conclusion was that, well, maybe he's a demigod. Could be a demigod. Maybe. Prabhupada said, even maybe, not sure. They weren't sure. Maybe he's a demigod. They just saw him as one of their own people, their own son, their own child. So they could not understand that he was the Supreme Lord. But Kunti Devi was not an inhabitant of Vrindavan, so she was actually appreciating here in this verse how great the residents of Vrindavan are. They could have Krishna in such a close association, intimate association with Krishna. Although Kunti was very intimate too. Krishna, whenever she's in trouble, Krishna would come and save them. But the residents of Vrindavan were even more intimate, and so she was appreciating that, that she couldn't have this kind of relationship. So we'll go on to the next verse, verse 32. Now we're going to find out some how people are bewildered as to why Krishna appears. First, they're bewildered about Krishna's qualities, and then about why. Yes. No, it, well, they had, like, just like we have our email, in those days they had their methods of communication, that the people, they would hear about Krishna's. Krishna was very famous. Everybody heard about his pastimes. They heard about his pastimes in Vrindavan, and even in Vrindavan they were hearing about what Krishna was doing in Mathura. So there was communication going on. No, it was by normal means. You know, like Narada Muni would travel, Narada Muni was always telling people what was happening. The sages, the saints would travel from place to place. Generally it was by the, because the saints, the sannyasis, the saints, they would travel the whole year and just from village to village, like Narada Muni, for example, and then they would glorify Krishna every place they were going. Just like Rukmini, she was in Dwarka. She was in Amaravati. But she heard about Krishna before her marriage. How did she hear about him? That these saints, these sages, they would talk about Krishna, and they would glorify him, and immediately she became attracted. She never saw him before she married him. And Krishna was in Dwarka, she was in Amaravati. But she wanted to marry Krishna because she heard about him from perhaps Narada Muni or some sage like that. And then she sent a letter to Krishna that I've heard about you and I decided that I want you for my husband. So that was a system in those days. Of course, the kings, they had messengers. But general news was given mostly by that. Also in Vrindavan, it's described that there were some village people, Aborigine ladies, and they used to carry their fruits to Mathura for selling. And so the people in Mathura would hear about what's going on in Vrindavan from the fruit wallas. And the Brahmana ladies, that's how they heard about Krishna. The Brahmana ladies who came to give Krishna their food, they had heard from these Aborigine, from the fruit wallas. These Aborigine ladies, they would sell musk, they would sell things from the jungle. And so they were telling them, oh, you know what Krishna's doing here in Vrindavan? And they were hearing, they were very attached to Krishna. So immediately they came and gave food to Krishna when he went begging. Oh yeah, I don't know about that actually. I haven't heard that. Well, she heard about it, yeah. She wasn't there. Yeah, what? You say she saw? How did she see?
She's Krishna's auntie, so she came from...
You think so?
Acha.
Really? Yeah, I didn't know that. She's saying, he's saying that Kunti came to visit Krishna during Damodar Leela. I never heard this before. You have, which book? Maybe he has some reference. Maybe he has some reference, yeah. Because in Krishna book or Bhagavatam, it's not there. But it's possible, it's quite possible she was there then for that. And that's how she knew. Yeah, that could be. Yeah, I don't know, I haven't read all the books. I've only read Krishna book and Srimad Bhagavatam. So he's saying there is a reference somewhere that Kunti actually witnessed these pastimes. And she was surprised. She came to visit. Because they were related, Vasudeva, the houses were related somehow, I can't remember exactly. But she was sister of Vasudeva. Right, the stepbrother, right. Okay, Vasudeva is the stepbrother of Nanda Maharaj. So the families were close together. So therefore it's quite possible that she came to visit them, especially to see Krishna and what he's doing. The auntie, yes. Okay, family relations. Okay, who is the father of Vasudev and Ugrasen? Was the father, had two wives, okay? Oh, he's got we've got the table here. Who gave you this? Okay. Here we have a genealogical table. Lord Brahma, the left side? Okay, here we go. Shurasena. Yeah, no, he's not the son of he's the son of Shurasena. Yeah. Okay, so Vasudeva is the son of Shurasena. Kunti is the daughter of Shurasena. And Shurasena had 9 other sons. Nanda is not listed here. But so he had a Vaishya wife. Shurasena had a Vaishya wife, and the son of the Vaishya wife was Nanda. So Nanda took up the Vaishya occupation because his mother was a Vaishya, although his father was a king. So he became king of the Vaishyas. Because his father was a king, his mother was a Vaishya, so he became king of the... So then his father, then he got this village of Vrindavan, or Gokula. Okay? Yeah, he's not listed here. They should have put Nanda here. And Ugrasena, then, let's see, Ahuka, they're in the same line. Shurasena is in the Vrishni dynasty, and Ahuka is in the Andaka, and both of them come from Satvata. So Ahuka is the father of Ugrasena, and Ugrasena is the father of Kamsa. So Kunti was like a cousin. It wasn't really the sister of Kamsa, but it was a cousin. And Devaki was also cousin in the same way. And so, and she married Vasudeva. So Kunti and Vasudeva are brother and sister, and so therefore Krishna is the nephew of Kunti. Because Krishna's father, Vasudeva, is her brother. Okay? You got that? All right. We try. You can have a look at this. Yeah, at the end of class. Okay, we'll go to the next verse. And we'll hear different opinions about why Krishna appeared, starting with one opinion today. Kunti is giving opinions of many, many people. I think we won't read this. I'll just read the Sanskrit because we have not so much time. Kichira horajam jatam punya shloka shikitaye yadopiasyam vivaye malyasye vachananam. Translation. Some say that the unborn is born for the glorification of pious kings, and others say he is born to please King Yadu, one of your dearest devotees. You appear in his family as sandalwood appears in the Himalaya hills. So here again, Krishna, he's unborn, but he's born. So in this case, Prabhupada, when he was lecturing on this verse, he was condemning those people who think that Krishna is born, that Krishna takes his birth, because Krishna doesn't take his birth. He simply appears. So how is it possible for Krishna to take birth? Srila Prabhupada explains that Krishna is all-pervading, he's in everyone's heart. So if he wants, if a devotee, if he's pleased by a devotee's service and a devotee's love, then he can come out of the heart and appear before the devotee. So this is what happened with Kunti, that he went from the heart to the womb and then he came out and he appeared before, Devaki. Devaki, he came out. He was in the family of the Yadu dynasty, so, and he appeared in the Yadu dynasty simply to glorify King Yadu. So that's the point that this verse is making, that he is Uttama Shloka, and he comes here to glorify Punya Shloka. Punya Shloka Shikirtaye. Punya Shloka means the devotee. Krishna is Uttama Shloka, he's glorified by prayers, and the devotee is always glorifying Krishna, so he's Punya Shloka. He's always glorifying Krishna with beautiful prayers. So the devotee, he's Punya Shloka. So here Kunti is saying that he's appearing just to glorify his devotee. And we heard that Krishna, he has nothing to do, but still, there's one thing he really likes to do, and that is to glorify his devotees. Just like the devotees, they like to glorify Krishna. So Krishna likes to glorify his devotees. So therefore, here it is said, Priyasya, Yado Priyasya. That King Yadu was very, very dear to Krishna. So therefore he came in his dynasty, just so Yadu would be glorified. Oh yes, that Krishna came in my dynasty. So Srila Prabhupada explains that, how can we become dear to Krishna? Just like Arjuna is very dear to Krishna. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktosime, Priyosime, because you are dear to me, because you are my devotee, therefore I'm explaining all this knowledge to you. And he also says the same thing at the end of Bhagavad Gita, that because you are very dear to me, I promise you that you will come to me. So here, because Yadu is very dear to Krishna, he came in his dynasty. He comes to glorify him. He came here to glorify Devaki and Vasudev. That's why he appeared in Devaki's womb. So Prabhupada explained, Uttama Shloka, he's always Uttama Shloka, devotee is Punya Shloka. We also hear this Punya Shavana Kirtanam, that when we chant and hear Krishna's name, then that's auspicious, that's pious. So when we do this, if we always chant and hear Krishna's name, we become dear to Krishna, just like Yadu. And then Krishna will be very pleased to glorify us. So just like the devotee, he has nothing to do but glorify Krishna. Krishna also, he has nothing to do except glorify his devotee. What are some more examples? He glorified Yadu here in this case. He glorifies the pious kings. Who else did he glorify? Devaki and Vasudev by appearing as their son. Who else did Krishna glorify by his birth? Nanda and Yashoda, yes. He glorified Nanda, he accepted Nanda and Yashoda as his parents. So that's what this, the reason she's saying that Krishna appears here in this verse is that he is appearing to glorify his devotees. And that's the only, that's the reason, some people say. Okay, does anybody have questions up to this point? And otherwise we'll go to one more verse today about Krishna's appearance. Okay, we'll go on to verse 33.
Apare vasudevasya devakyam yachita vyagat ajas tamasya kshemaya vadaya chasuradisham.
Others say that since both Vasudev and Devaki prayed for you, you have taken your birth as their son. Undoubtedly you are unborn, yet you take your birth for their welfare and to kill those who are envious of the demigods. So what's the verse in Bhagavad Gita that reminds you of this verse here and this reason for Krishna's appearance? Prayutanaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkitam. He comes to protect his devotees and to kill the miscreants. So in the previous verse we hear that Krishna is Yadava, that he's born in Yadu dynasty. He's a Yadu, he's a Yadava, Yadavaya Keshavaya Nama. So now in this verse we're hearing he's Devaki Nandana, the Vasudeva Nandana, that he's the son of Devaki. So Krishna has unlimited names, just so he can please all his unlimited devotees. And the Prabhupada said, and all these names of Krishna are summarized in one name. And that one name is Krishna. He's all attractive. He's attractive to Yashoda, he's attractive to Devaki, he's attractive to Vasudeva, he's attractive to everyone. So the killing of the demons, that can be done simply by his material, external energy. He doesn't need to come for that. And we discussed this before. He doesn't need to come to protect his devotees even. So what's the other reason that Krishna comes besides protecting his devotees, besides killing the demons? The suffering of separation of devotees. So now in our level of Krishna consciousness, we may be suffering some disease or some material thing, but the more advanced you become, that suffering, it's a different kind of suffering, and that's separation from Krishna. And that's not suffering, actually, so far as I understand it. That's what they say in the Shastras, that it's actually the greatest happiness, even greater than meeting. So anybody have any questions on this point, on this verse? Yes? Right, oh, the previous verse. Does it explain here in the purport? Otherwise I can't elaborate. Sutapa and Prishni. Oh, yeah. This is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Sutapa and Prishni, for 10,000 years, they got married, and then the first thing they did after getting married is they went off to perform austerities. Can you imagine? What kind of... So they were living outside in the elements, the rain, the snow, the whatever. They were just out in the open performing austerities. And for food, they had the leaves, the dried leaves that fell off the tree. They didn't even eat the wet leaves. They waited for them to fall off. And if no leaves fill up, then they didn't eat. So this is great austerity. You just eat the dried leaves that fall off the tree, because only usually the good leaves don't fall off. So they did this for 10,000 years. 10,000 years. Why? Why did they do such great austerities? They wanted Krishna for their son. So this is described in Srimad Bhagavatam somewhere or other. I read it. That they perform immense austerities just to get Krishna. And then Krishna was pleased. And of course, he appeared in that birth also. He appeared as Prishnigarbha. Prishnigarbha. And I can't exactly remember what was his incarnation. You remember, what was that? Vamana. No, it wasn't Vamana. Vamana was the son of Aditi and Kashyap. That was also a previous birth. That wasn't this birth. Prishni and Sutapa was one birth, and Aditi and Kashyap was another birth. Yeah, the same people. They're all the same. They're all the same. Mother of the demigods is also Devaki. And Kashyap, Vasudeva. And another birth there, Prishnigarbha. If I remember correctly, it is the Hansa avatar that appeared to Lord Brahma. I'm not exactly sure though. I have to check that. So don't quote me, yeah. Yeah, it's eternal. Yeah. Devaki and Vasudeva are also eternally related to Krishna. Right. Since Krishna knew they were his eternal parents, why is he making them go through so much austerity? Right. Well, it's just showing what you have to go through if you want to have Krishna. Don't try for it in this world. Don't think that we can imitate. In other words, they're not ordinary, obviously. Who can do this? Of course, in previous ages, I have heard that many, many people, everybody could do it. They could do this great austerities, but we could never think of doing anything like that. So there's only one thing we can do, and that is to follow the path given by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and to chant the holy name. So we cannot think that we can become Krishna's mother and father by performing austerities or imitating. We cannot imitate Devaki and Vasudeva, Prishni and Sutapa. No way. All we can do is just aspire to become servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. Hopefully in that way we can get a place in Krishna's Leela. Servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. And that way we can get... And that's also what Lord Chaitanya said. He said, I am Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudas. And that is our aspiration. And that's also very... It's the most wonderful thing. That is because that's our position, actually. So we should aspire for who we are, and that's who we are. We can never aspire to become like Devaki and Vasudeva. They are eternally his associates. They can perform wonderful things by the mercy of Krishna that we can never even imagine to do. Any other questions? Yes. What's that? Previous verse, okay. Oh, why is the example of Malaya Hills? Yeah, Srila Prabhupada. So the verse, I'll read the verse. The verse says, you appear in his family as sandalwood appears in the Malaya Hills. So, referring to Krishna's appearance in the family of Yadu. So, Srila Prabhupada explained that previously in Malaysia, in the Malaya Hills, it was very famous for sandalwood. And now they're growing rubber plants. There's no more sandalwood because no one cares for sandalwood. And people want rubber for tires. So therefore, now they're famous for rubber plants. But before, Malaysia was very famous for sandalwood plants. Everyone would go and get their sandalwood from Malaysia. So therefore, because sandalwood was coming from Malaysia, it was called Malaya Chandan. So the name Malaysia was associated with Chandan. So in the same way, Yadu dynasty is a certain family. And because Krishna appeared in it, then therefore the Yadu dynasty became famous. Just like Malaysia became famous because Chandan was found there. So Yadus became famous Because Krishna appeared there. And when Krishna came here, the whole family was known as the Yadu dynasty. In Dwarka, it was known as the Yadus. They were known as, he was known as Yadava. And so, therefore, that's what this reference is about, that Yadu became famous, just like Malaysia became famous. So Yadu became famous because Krishna appeared in his family. Otherwise, who would know who Yadu is? He's way, way back here in this, so many generations. Many, many generations back in this tree. I'll see if I can find his name. Yadu. Diti Buddha. Bali Bana. Okay, Krishna. Ah, here's Yadu. Not that far back. So Yadu is way back here. He's Krishna's. So Krishna's grandfather is Shurasena. Then there's many, many in between. Doesn't even say how many, just as many descendants. Then Vrishni, Satvata, many descendants, Kroshta, and then Yadu. So, I mean, he's like great, 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 great grandfather, maybe, you know, 20 generations before. So who would associate him with Krishna? But because he was a great devotee, Yadu. Therefore, and it was his dynasty. He's the leader, he is the head of this dynasty that Krishna is coming in. Therefore, Krishna made him famous. Therefore, that's why Prabhupada is saying here, Kunti is saying here, that you came in Yadu's dynasty just to glorify him. So now the name of Yadu is glorified. You hear the name Yadu and it's associated with Krishna. Krishna is Yadava. Krishna is one of the Yadus. Just like us, we're in the disciplic succession from Sri Rupa Goswami. So we're known as Rupanugas. So, of course, we don't make Rupa Goswami glorious, but Rupa Goswami, being in that dynasty, is very glorious to be Rupanugas, and he's very, very far, far, far back. Of course, Srila Prabhupada, he made the dynasty glorious. He made the dynasty of Sri Rupa Goswami very glorious by spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. Okay, any other questions on these verses? So we finished verse 34 through 37 for tomorrow. So I think we'll finish. Okay? All glories to Srila Prabhupada.